Ingram Smith, Bud Elliott, back again for another episode of the Knollcast. Bud, it is time to look exclusively at NC State. This will be one of our kind of shorter game preview episodes, but still kind of working our way back into the flow of things after a prolonged absence. So excited about jumping into this, as always. Want to start this podcast, as we always do, by thanking our friends at Louisiana Hot Sauce. Three simple ingredients, one fantastic product, and one great partner for us. So want to thank them, as always. Anytime you get a chance to mention them on social media is probably the easiest and most direct way of supporting the show. With that, Bud, let's jump into it, and let's talk about an NC State team that hasn't necessarily impressed, but still has a pretty impressive roster.
Yeah, noon kick on, I believe, ESPN? I think so. Probably the first decent noon game, actually, of the year. A lot of noon games this year have been just dreadful, but finally a decent noon schedule. Line is, I believe, 12 over under. I think I saw a 51, so that'll be interesting. I know we may have a slightly different pick on that towards the end of the podcast. But, yeah, look, NC State, Ingram, I think we have to guard, and this is kind of a theme of this week as well. In my opinion, we have to kind of guard against changing our opinion on things too quickly based on just a couple games, right? Or based, if you're talking about James Blackman, on no games, right? I like James Blackman, and I think Jimbo Fisher's positivity about James Blackman is, for the most part, well-warranted. I think he has a higher ceiling than DeAndre Francois. That does not mean he will reach that ceiling this game, next week, or even this year. And I do think that James Blackman has done some impressive things at practice. However, if you've paid attention to all the comments this week on Tomahawk Nation from players and whatnot, I'm not saying it's forced. I'm just saying sometimes when you stick a microphone in front of a kid, they're going to say really positive stuff, whether it's warranted or not. And I almost think some of this stuff, you know, James Blackman's an alpha dog. James Blackman is this, he's this, he's that. To me, they may be projecting a little bit, right? Last week, I know he actually struggled during practice. Not this week, last week. And maybe that was Jimbo Fisher throwing everything he could at him. Maybe, you know, to kind of test the kid and say, okay, where, instead of knowing what you're comfortable with, I need to also find out what you're not comfortable with so I don't call that in the game. You know, hey, do you open the right way on handoffs? And that's something that you kind of take for granted with a more veteran quarterback, but with a guy who's only been here for 10 weeks or 12 weeks now, because he did not enroll early. You know, just simple stuff like that. That's the kind of stuff that I think was maybe eye-opening if you're at practice. But I do think that he's going to be a very good quarterback in time. Just this week, it's hard to know exactly. And I kind of want to just tell everybody, take that praise from the players with a grain of salt. Much in the same way, by the way, I think we should take NC State's early season results a little bit with a grain of salt. This is why, you know, if you do these like preseason projection systems, a lot of that still factors in to your current feeling about a team. You can't just scrap what you thought about a team in the preseason after just three games, because there's not a lot of data so far. NC State is a team, to me, that has been very unlucky so far, particularly if you look at, you know, success rate is how often you run successful plays. Explosive rate is, you know, how often you get explosive plays. Now, there's some elements of that, Ingram, to say, okay, maybe your secondary sucks, or maybe on the flip side, maybe if you're not creating explosive plays on offense, maybe you don't have any receivers who are explosive. There's also, and I've talked to Bill Connolly at SB Nation about this, he said, look, success rate stabilizes a lot quicker than does explosive rate. Explosive rate has a lot of variance, a lot of randomness. NC State is one of the teams out there that has the most drastic difference between success rate, which theirs is very good, and explosive rate, which so far, this is very bad. In addition to the fact they've had like two special teams turnovers and a kickoff return allowed for a touchdown on the first play of the year. So I'm going to say just kind of tap the brakes on everything a little bit. I don't think this is going to be a super easy game.
I think, you know, and we talked about this last podcast, I haven't been particularly impressed at all with what I've seen from NC State so far. At the same time, I think you're right to say that you can't just dismiss what you thought about a team coming into the year, and that, you know, if you're looking at a roster and you're observing what's possible, and, you know, if you're looking at kids that you have 3 years of film on and they're talented, doesn't mean they're not talented after 3 weeks. But really, I think, you know, so much about everything has changed with this season that it's hard to maintain to any of kind of your preseason ideas as to what this game would be. This was something we talked a lot about a stretch that honestly, if Florida State were to go 3-1, they'd be in really good shape. Fast forward 4 weeks, and all of a sudden this is game two for Florida State after a three-week layoff. So I don't know that there's a whole lot that anybody can be particularly certain about with this game, whether that how NC State's going to look playing a team that they care about and have game planned for, or what Florida State's going to have any type of or any kind of resemblance as to what Florida State will be, both after the break, but particularly after a quarterback that, you're right, had a lot of positive comments, but those are nice. I personally haven't put an ounce of anything into them simply because it's just conversation at this point. There's no way that really any of us can have any idea as to how a true freshman is going to respond playing his first taste of big-time football. So a lot of things to learn at noon and a lot of things to look forward to.
If you want to preview this game, you could listen to this podcast, which you're already doing. So nice job. You could also just go back and watch last year's game.
After you listen to the podcast, correct, though. But yeah, we need full consumption of product first, please.
In addition to the podcast, go watch last year's game. Because look, NC State lost very little off that team last year. A team that, look, honestly, could have beat FSU last year before DeAndre, the play before DeAndre Francois throws a winning touchdown.
What's a pretty lucky win, or no, I don't know lucky, but fortunate. There's aspects of that play that are particularly fortunate.
No, sure. they got lucky. We can say it, sure. Yeah, look, the play before he throws the touchdown, he throws an interception. It's just dropped.
Well, I'm saying even the touchdown itself is pretty fortunate. I mean, that ball hangs in the air, and that's
won some
beautiful play that that gave Florida State the winning points there. But you're right, the play before, there's no, well, maybe it was lucky, maybe it was fortunate, whatever. No, it was flat-ass luck. I mean, the kid's got the game, and he drops it.
He threw it to him. Kind of like they had the game against Clemson and missed it. 27-yard field goal, I think it was. It was pretty short. All right, so I think the NC State's defense will play James Blackmon much like they played DeAndre Francois last year. Francois was a redshirt. Blackman's a true, obviously, yada, yada. They are going to run a 4-2-5 defense. That's what they base out of. They have a really good defensive line, probably the second best defensive line FSU will face this year, I think. After watching Alabama, this could be a better defensive line than Alabama. I'm not totally convinced about that, so maybe they're tied for second. In my mind, Clemson is the number one defensive line in the entire country, including Florida State, by the way. I know that pisses off people, but whatever. I don't think Florida State has as many first-round types on their defense as Clemson does. Not up front.
Yeah. No, no. Dexter Lawrence isn't playing in Tallahassee, unfortunately.
Right. And neither is Christian Wilkins, right, to be honest. Like I like Nnadi, but Nnadi doesn't do the versatility stuff that Wilkins does. So this defensive line up front, what makes them unique? First of all, size. They are just huge up front, dude. Look at these listed weights, and I've seen these kids in person. 287 and 275 are their defensive ends. That is big. That means that they really control the run game with their front. Their tackles are 315, 312. They're primary backups. One of their ends, 287. Their primary tackle backup, 3.25. And then they've got a couple guys who can rush the passer who they bring in situationally. The other thing, look at the grades these guys are. They're four starters up front. Senior, 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 senior. This is a grown man front, not only in size, but also in age and experience. This is going to be a very difficult front to block. I think they are much better. We go back to the preseason when we talked about, look, people are going to think FSU's offensive line sucks after the first four games. This is one of those games, and this is probably the game we were thinking about the most other than Alabama in discussing this. This is better than Miami's front, by the way. I know everybody's worried about Miami. This is a better defensive line than Miami. It may not be a better defense overall. I think Miami has better linebackers. NC State's linebackers, look, they're experienced. They got two seniors there, Gerard Fernandez and Arius Moore. Arius Moore, we've seen. Fernandez, I don't actually remember a whole lot about. But, I mean, again, two seniors starting there. Their nickelback, Sean Boone, is probably their best DB. He's also a senior. This is a pretty damn good front seven, man. It's going to be hard to just like, everybody's going to say, hey, let's line up and run the ball and help out James Blackmon. Well, guys, it's probably the team that you're going to have the least success doing that against, just the, you know, hey, run on first, run on second, run on third type thing, man. They're going to have to chuck it around a little bit because the secondary is probably the weakness of this team.
So in order to do that, and this is not something that's unique particularly to this team, it's something that's pretty consistent with Fisher's offense and offensive philosophy in general. But frequently the friendliest downs to throw are the earliest downs. And how do you balance by taking advantage of the most opportune time or the most friendly time to try to throw the ball, and also be easy with what you're asking a kid that's been on campus for 9 weeks and has never seen a college defense to participate and to perform at a high level?
Right. So I think you have to take your shots, which means, hey, play action, get the ball down the field. But NC State is going to try to win this game with their front four and putting more guys back in coverage. If they can get pressure with their front four, which I think they'll be able to do some, then you know, they can drop more guys into coverage, maybe play a little deeper coverage, allow fewer explosive plays as they've been victimized by in the first couple games. If you're Florida State, you have to try to suck those safeties up, get them to pay attention to the run, maybe go a little max protect to give James Blackman some more time to get the ball down the field. But you also have to work, I think, your screen game a lot. You have to give him some friendly early down throws. Hey, you know, 4-yard completion on first down, take it. That's cool, man. That sets up second and six. I think you have to really, this to me, because there's two ways to protect, to pass protect, right? You can pass protect with tight ends and backs blocking, or you can pass protect by getting the ball out quickly and you know, spreading the defense out, getting the ball out quickly, slide adjust, hot read, that type of stuff. I think what I would do in this case is not spread it out quite so much. I think I would go more tight ends, more backs, and you know, kind of take some of the decision-making away from James Blackman. We saw the play where DeAndre Francois got hurt, right? That was a missed blitz adjustment by him. I don't want to put that on DeAndre Francois or on James Blackman here. I want to see him you know, be protected more by backs and tight ends. So I'm expecting a lot more I formation. I'm expecting a lot more double tights. Hell, maybe go some, you know, some 22 personnel where you have two backs and two tight ends. I'm very cool with that. Swing the ball out to the running backs. Make some of these NC State, the, you know, younger DBs that, you know, they're secondary, sophomore, junior, senior. You know, let's see if those guys want to tackle Cam Akers out of the backfield or Jacques Patrick out of the backfield. So, you know, to test them out a little bit with some of your tight ends and whatnot, because they're also going to help you in pass protection. Work the bubble screen game. Work all that stuff. Give him some stuff where he can. I'm not saying he makes up his mind fully before the snap, but gives him a pretty good idea. Hey, I see this, and I'm going to swing it here.
Yeah, he can narrow the field pretty significantly with with what he's looking at and making his decision based off of what you mentioned there with 22 package, two backs, two tights. It lets you have two. You know, it lets you have two. That could be a situation where you could get Patrick and Akers on the field at the same time. And this is not just a one game observation, but the more that I look at this offense and have gone back and watched yet more game film of 2016 and the absence that we've had, firmly convinced that Ryan Izzo is your best player on offense. Not necessarily the guy that's going to have the best pro career, but he is your highest performing entity on offense, and I would not be surprised if he was not even more of a main focus in this game in particular. Your tight ends overall, but Izzo in particular against NC State.
Here's the other, Ingram, I totally agree with that. And here's the other thing about playing more backs and tight ends in this game. In the run game, man, it is so difficult to root these ends out. That NC State presents kind of a unique challenge in running to the edges, which Florida State does very well with their zone run game, because these guys, you don't usually see 287, 275 on the edge in a four-down defense. I mean, you'll see that in a three-down.
What is that, 563 pounds of defensive end, something like that?
That's really big, yeah. And it's not like they're fat. I mean, Chubbs and Street are – I know the kid's name is Chubb, but they're really jacked.
Yeah, the kid's name is Chubb, but he's also – look at any of his cousins or anything else if you want to consider how athletic the kid is.
Yeah. And, you know, FSU recruited both these kids, and they're FSU-quality players, as is B.J. Hill. I think you need to help out your tackles with some tight end blocking here. If you can spread them out as well and get them to widen out a little bit within that formation because you have the tight ends and they're worried about getting outflanked, then I think you can actually do some tackle fold, some tight end fold, some stuff to get the ball up inside of the defense and run the ball between the tackles there, which sounds weird, but you actually might have more success running between the tackles than you are going to be maybe in the C-gap and D-gap, which is a little more outside, you know, outside the tackle, outside the tight end. But if you have those tight ends in there, you get them to spread out, you can get some help on those ends, but you can also potentially widen them out and run between the tackles. Then you can set up some play-action shots. I think that'll be pretty key in this game. All right, Ingram, you know, another thing, too, I think, is that you do have to play, I think, somewhat conservatively here. And by that, I just mean, let's say that James Blacken goes out and throws an incomplete on first down. It's going to happen. Man, running the ball on second down and getting back to like third and six, you know, maybe third and five, to me, that's a win. Because then you can still tell him, all right, James, you got something safe here on third down. If you want to hit it, that's cool. You don't have to feel the need to force anything. You know, if NC State plays as you know, conservative of coverage as we think, one of the most important things here, Ingram, is the finding the balance, right? Not trying to force. I know James Blackman likes to hit the big play, but if NC State is able to get pressure with their front four and they're dropping seven, that's really not a good time to be forcing stuff. Think back to those Tampa Bay Bucks defenses in the early 2000s when they were getting a lot of pressure with their front four and they were dropping all those guys. Man, teams that tried to force stuff against them, they feasted. You got to balance this. You got to set up some of the easier throws for him. Finding the right balance is really key. And I'll say this too: this is weird because FSU's punter is not any good. But look, don't be afraid to punt the ball.
We'll see. That'd be a nice of all the things to take away from this game. Obviously, a win would be most important. But Logan Tyler to come out and have a solid kind of rebound performance would be a real nice thing, and fortunately or unfortunately, depending on how you look at it, I think he's going to get a decent number of at bats, and we'll have a decent idea as to if there's any kind of progress made, or if we're not looking at what is a pretty scary situation from a mental aspect, kickers, punters included. When it goes south, sometimes it doesn't necessarily come back, and there's just too many. Tyler has all the physical tools in the world. There's too many reasons. For him not to be able to, there are too many reasons, in my opinion, to have some concern with kind of where he is in general. So interesting to see what type of game he has. And as you mentioned, look, settling, you know, falling back on your punter situationally is not the worst thing in general, but particularly not too bad when you're starting a kid that's been on campus for 10 weeks.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, look, most likely a Logan Tyler punt is better than a turnover. Right, I mean that's something I shouldn't even have to say, but given that's to me kind of that's kind of sad state about these special teams, but I do think, man, some of the safe throws to the backs, get the backs and tight ends involved in the run game, go max protect, give him some time because he does throw a pretty deep ball, go a lot of play action if you can, also get him outside sometimes too, maybe some boots, some rollouts. That type of stuff, run your waggle, that type of deal. And I think you can find some success against a pretty good NC State defense.
I think that's a good look at what people might see on Saturday when Florida State's on defense. But how do you expect Florida State's offense, how do you expect for Florida State to attack NC State's offense?
So this is an interesting offense, right? It's thanks to their QB. And Ryan Finley, it's a pretty damn good college quarterback, man. You know what his completion percentage is this year? I looked this up. This is kind of crazy.
It's in the very healthy 70s, isn't it?
76%.
Ooh.
What the hell? Nobody does that. That's like PlayStation stuff. But in watching him, look, he gets the ball out quickly. He doesn't throw interceptions, zero on the year. Throws the ball accurately, typically throws the ball and gives this guy a ability to make a run after the catch because he's throwing it in a catchable spot, usually hits him in stride. The arm is not real big, but it is accurate, and he does make really good decisions. He's kind of like a Rich Gannon. I mean, to go a little throwback reference here, look, I think he's pretty damn good, and he's good enough to beat FSU if the offense doesn't do anything. Now, they do mix it up a lot. Five different players are on pace to catch more than 50 balls. I went back and looked here. The most Jimbo Fisher has ever had is three guys with 50 catches. So that should give you, since 2008, which is how far I went back and looked at FSU's offense, only three guys in a season have caught 50 balls, in a single season. NC State's got five guys on pace to catch 50 plus. That's really good. They're primarily an 11 personnel team, so it's one tight end and one running back. They will throw the ball a lot to Jalen Samuels, who is a sort of like tight end slash running back type, an interesting player to be sure. He is like 5'11", 230. So it's kind of a guy they use in a lot of different roles. I know they love to get him out and block as well because he's kind of versatile as a blocker. They are a big RPO team, actually, despite the fact that Finley's not a great runner. He's mobile enough. For that reason, Engram, and they don't hit big plays down the field so far this year.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. They haven't threatened a whole lot of people vertically so far. We'll see if that changes at all, but they don't necessarily try to extend you a whole lot on defense.
Correct. So in looking at this, all these guys that catch the ball for them a lot, who has a high yards per completion number, right, or yards per catch number? They don't have anybody in the top 100 in the nation in that stat. Their top guy is 11 yards per catch. In order to be top 100 in the nation, I think you have to have caught at least two balls a game, which, okay, they would qualify there. And that number is 16. And so 16 guys have at least, or 16, excuse me, 100 guys have at least 16 yards per completion. NC State doesn't have a single guy in there. So they have struggled to take the top off the defense at times this year. So how do you attack this? Number one, you got to whip them up front, right? This has got to be a game where FSU controls the ball or controls the line of scrimmage and wins. Just as I think NC State's defensive line will win over FSU's offensive line. And that's not because I think FSU's offensive line is bad right now. I just think that their, NC State's defensive line is really good. Look, I think you've got to beat this group up front. Now, it's a pretty veteran group, mostly redshirt juniors and seniors, but they can be beat. I don't think their tackles are necessarily all that great. You also, I think, have to play a lot of man coverage in this game. And you have to say, okay, we've seen what you've done against South Carolina and Marshall and Furman. Because they're such a big RPO team and because their quarterback makes such good decisions, this is kind of what we saw against Brad Kaya last year, right? Eventually, FSU was like, okay, Kaya makes pretty good decisions. He doesn't do a lot of stupid stuff. We're just going to have to take away his options here, and if they can beat us in one-on-one coverage, fine. And they did a little bit last year, but not enough, and Florida State ended up winning that game. I think you have to stop the run, which, hey, duh. Obviously, because that helps a little bit with the RPO stuff. But really, the way you shut down RPOs is being able to play really good man coverage. Because then the guy is not really concerned with the run or the pass. He's just concerned with his man. He's sticking to his man. Now, NC State's not dumb. Elijah Drinkwitz is a very good offensive coordinator for them. And I'm sure he'll have counters to this. And he'll say, okay, well, look how much man Florida State's playing. He's going to run a lot of motion and shifts and whatnot in order to try and get those guys and get leverage to the corners and get numbers and get some matchups that he wants. And I'm sure they'll get some of those. But the real key to me here in this is play good man coverage to take away the easy throws and make NC State execute more difficult throws, especially throws outside the hash. Because for all the stuff Finley does, I don't think he necessarily has the strongest arm in the world. He doesn't necessarily throw an amazing deep ball. Now, maybe he'll come out and throw a billion of them against FSU, but I kind of doubt that. One of the ways you do that is you play a lot of single high safety coverage, okay? You take and you put whoever you like there back. Maybe it's Westbrook. Maybe it's Lane if you're going to play Derwin up in the nickelback position, the star. You probably play a rover down low in order to kind of screw with some of the RPO game as well. And you say, okay, let's challenge this deep. You got these receivers that have caught a lot of balls. They didn't really caught a lot of deep balls. Make NC State do what they're not all that comfortable doing. And so I think you actually want to challenge their early throws. And Engram, one of the big keys on this, and I know you've looked at this too, NC State's not a team that does very well on long downs. They have a marked difference when they're ahead of the chains to when they're behind the chains. Some teams are actually not that bad, and their splits are not that bad, but NC State's splits so far this year are pretty extreme when it comes to being ahead or behind the chains.
You're right. Some of that I think is legitimate. Some of it may just be small sample size as kind of everything that we deal with right now from our personal takeaway from games. But I am not mildly embarrassed to say that I watched the entirety of the Furman NC State game and was not particularly impressed with a lot of things they did but was particularly not impressed in their ability to pick up third and six, third and seven, third and nine. Again, you know, were they probably operating off of a pretty watered-down, simplistic form of what we might see this weekend? Yeah, almost certainly. But still, that's, you know, that's live college football, and that's what you have to judge people by, and that's one thing that stood out to me in watching that game.
Yeah, I totally agree, man. They look, they're a team that does a lot of RPO stuff. They do a lot of play action, a lot of shifts in motion, but they're not a team that's set up to really win third and seven, third and eight, right? Florida State, with Jameis, did that, and they consistently won it. There are some teams on the schedule, like Lamar, can still do it. But NC State's not really one of those teams. So if you get this team in third and long, you can let your pass rushers just go to town and start eating. And that's something I'm excited to see, because I think they will be able to do that enough. That's the other thing. If you play the man coverage, right, as opposed to zone, and you're not really all that scared of NC State's receivers, which I'm not, just based on sample sets so far, granted it's limited, you're more likely to get incompletions as opposed to, like, you know, tackled for a four-yard gain type thing, which is still a good result for the defense. But in this case, I think you do want to gamble a little bit to maybe get some incompletions, maybe get some interceptions, see if you can contest some more balls, maybe get some balls tipped up in the air, maybe get an interception off this kick. He's probably not going to throw one right to you, but if you can tip one, maybe you pick it off, maybe you go the other way. I think it's worth it to take the risk to set up those more high leverage downs for the offense or for the opposing offense than it is to play more conservative and just tackle. I would go more man here.
I think that's fair, and I think that's a pretty good idea as to what we'll see. Bud, anything else that you take away, particularly from what Florida State may see when they're defending this offense?
I mean, they're so versatile. Like, they do a lot of different stuff because they trust him to make such good decisions. He's very good at finding the open guy. Doesn't really force the ball. But the one thing I think, man, just in watching this, when they hit big plays, it's usually due to a busted coverage. Right, they're not winning a whole lot of like they're not beating you down the field that much, and they're not really winning a whole lot of like super physical size matchups. I mean, they're you know, one of their receivers is 6'3", 213, the other guy is 6'2", 217. That's good size, but that's not like freakish shots. You know, Kelvin Harmon is their biggest guy. Steven Lewis, I saw in high school, he's not bad, but they don't really have that guy that there's no Torrey Holt on this team to throw back to old NC State days. And if you're a student out at FSU, Torrey Holt was really good at NC State before he was really good in the NFL.
And absolutely smoked Florida State one afternoon in Raleigh.
Yeah, like 200-something receiving yards, I think, on that day.
Just post route after post route after post route. But, yeah, well, really good player. Really good player from a long, long time ago. And happy to hear that there aren't any similar aspects running around for the team in Raleigh this week.
And to that end, look – a lot of times when you blow an assignment and you give up that big play and the wide open type nature of the play, it's because you're trying too hard. And I get that. And they may want to press for their young quarterback. But I'm going to pledge right now, minimal complaining as long as Florida State wins this game. It's your first game with a true freshman quarterback against a defense that has, you know, probably more than half of their guys will get drafted, I would think, eventually. That's a pretty tough test for a true freshman quarterback. The defense is going to have to carry FSU. The offense, hopefully, complementing the defense, taking selective shots, controlling the football. And you know, look, man, you got this many dudes on your FSU defense that you think are first-rounders? Play like it. You know, make this NC State offense look bad.
But as we pivot, why don't we take a second and thank our friends at Madison Social. Look, Madison Social is a fantastic place 365 days a year, but no better time to enjoy Madso and all of the restaurants of the Ford the Table group than this time of year. Weather's perfect, football is in the air, and football is to be consumed. Madso opening up at 8 o'clock on Saturday, if I have my details right here. So always a chance to go in. No better place than to kind of enjoy what is in front of you. Take a look at Doak Campbell Stadium. Maybe have a Nolcast margarita if you're so inclined, and always. Just keep our friends in the back of your mind as to what you're doing on game days and what you're doing if you're either a Tallahassee resident or you're somebody that, you know, makes their way to Tallahassee 6-7 times a year in support of the program that we spend our time here discussing and obsessing over.
8 a.m., that is the right time to open. Even though, look, as their nice koozies that they have there say, noon games suck. Yes, They do, but they suck a little bit less. If you get in the Mad Sow at 8 a.m., you can enjoy a nice Nolcast Bloody Mary. I may need to have one of those before I head up to the press box. That could be delicious, especially since it would probably be a nice warm day come Saturday. And get in there, enjoy some great brunch items. You can actually, if you're not going into the game, you can watch all the games right there at Medicine Social. They have a great number of TV screens and great food and drink as well. Make sure you tell them the Nolcast sent you, and we appreciate you supporting our sponsors, Medicine Social, Township, and Central. Three great concepts right there in College Town, right in the shadow of Doak Campbell Stadium.
Absolutely. Lucky to be able to partner with them. Do want to add one more note before we transition our focus, and that is, this is something we mentioned, kind of gotten a little bit lost with everything that's going on in the state of Florida, but the Florida Tap Invitational is still very much scheduled and will take place September 29th and the 30th. Features almost exclusively local Florida beers, 50 plus breweries, 100 plus rare unique beers. FLTapInvitational.com. Encourage everybody to go take a look at that and to participate in what is a pretty fantastic event being put on. Does that bring us to our prediction phase of the podcast?
I think it does. Yeah,
I will start off and let you end with yours. I like Florida State in this game. I don't like NC State as a team from what I've seen so far. But I, just from a gambling perspective, I would probably take is the spread still at 12, Bud?
Let's look up so we're absolutely sure. I don't think it moved very much on a Friday morning. 12.5 or 13 and 51 is there. So let's give out 12.5 and 51.
The 51's pretty, in my mind, pretty accurate, and I wouldn't touch that. I do like Florida State, this is not my forte, but I would take I would take NC State plus 12, 12.5, certainly 13 if you can get it. In my mind, this game is a Florida State victory, and it's something like in the high 20s, high teens, somewhere, 27, 17, something like that.
I think that works. I'm going 27-20, which is a one-score game.
Okay.
But
we did not confer predictions, by the way. We did not talk previously.
We almost never do.
Yeah.
Especially not this week. I got internet back just late last night. You went 27-17?
Yes.
And I'm going 27-20. Which is two field goals, two touchdowns for NC State, and three touchdowns and two field goals for Florida State. So, yeah, I don't think they'll blow them out. If they do, I think it's more likely that it's like 27-10 or 27-3,
Like that.
Something right. Where the defense just absolutely destroys them or something. I don't think we're going to have like a 48-20 type blowout. So if you're a sporting guy or gal out there and you were looking to I think the chance that this goes under is greater than the chance that it goes over, but I agree with you that total is relatively solid. But I, 13 or I think this hit 14 at one point this week. It's just hard for me to see, 14 being covered unless the defense just goes out there and just absolutely shuts them out or shuts them down rather. We got time to talk a couple other lines around the league.
Let's do it. Let's take a little look around the league and ideas to what people might see outside of a noon kick on Saturday.
All right. Virginia is catching 13 from at Boise State. Wake Forest is giving 5 at App State. And Duke is giving 2 at UNC. Any of those catch your eye?
Yeah, the Virginia, maybe I'm making too much of one game. I would almost be tempted to touch that Virginia game, to be honest.
I thought so as well. I wish I could get 14 on that. Boise State's offense has not looked very good, by the way. Wake Forest, I do wonder if it's a little bit of a look-ahead game to Florida State next week for them. They got to go on the road to App. App was pretty game so far this year. And then, look, Duke being favored at North Carolina. I like Duke a lot this year. But, man, it almost feels like the Lions are catching up to the hype. Mm-hmm.
I agree there. Yeah, the one that I would be the most tempted to play is the first one that we discussed. I'm going to wait another week before I fully make up my mind as to just how above average Duke is. I don't necessarily want to call them good, but see if they are what people seem to think they might be.
Here's something for you, Ingram. Pitt has just been blasted the last 2 weeks by really high-powered, great downfield passing attacks.
Mm-hmm.
And now they got to go play Georgia Tech. And I personally think that they're much more equipped to play Georgia Tech from a style of defense perspective. But what I don't know is what Pitt's mindset will be. You know, they might be demoralized right, yeah. after last week. I know they opened up the quarterback competition. I'm not sure how much that'll help their defense. Georgia Tech and Atlanta has given 9 to them. You interested in that?
No, just because Georgia Tech is as sporadic as they are as well. And that is, man, if there's any seed of this season hasn't gone very well and I may not be quite as fully invested as I thought I'd be at this point, then playing that offense is only like fertilizer for that. Not something that I think necessarily brings like the most out of you if you're a defensive player, and I would steer clear of that game myself. But if I were to forced to play it, I'd probably actually take Georgia Tech.
Man, I'm really glad I don't want to play that game because I don't know about Pitt's mindset. And I agree with you on Georgia Tech about how they play. Now, here's something for you. Will the streak end? Florida, I think, has won 30 in a row. I agree with you. I think Florida's going to beat Kentucky.
Yeah, I think people are making too much out of this. And, I mean, obviously it would be a low point, certainly, for a program that's experienced some low points over the past 5-6 years. But I think all those, you know, people in their late 20s, early 30s who have aspirations of seeing a first win in their lifetime are going to have to wait yet another year.
Here's something for you. Florida's run defense this year. We've talked about this a little bit on the show, and we'll talk about it more as long as the trend holds. They're suspect this year. 411 yards allowed to running backs on 71 carries. That's a pretty high number there. Kentucky's offense, though, their run offense, 114th in the nation in run success rate against Southern Miss, South Carolina, and some nobody team. That does not really, Ingram, to me, sound like a team that is set up to take advantage of Florida's main weakness here.
Mm-hmm. Right. No, I don't think they are. I don't think this is a great matchup for Kentucky in general, and I don't expect them to. Again, nothing I would love more than to see that, but I don't think that they'll be able to break what is one of the more absurd streaks in college athletics.
Oh, very important over under here. Over under attendance for the Toledo at Miami game.
Yes. Announced. I don't know. Where are you putting the number here?
I'm going to say announced. 52.
Oh, give me the under all day.
You don't like Miami will just lie their butts off?
I don't think they're going to be able to. I don't even think Miami will be able to craft a narrative that says that they have north of 50,000 people in that state.
So you think my number's way off? If I had told you 40?
In the number in my head, I have around 42, 43.
Okay.
That's what I was saying.
So you think I got too much pride to admit that they're only going to have like 27,000 people in the stands?
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Fair enough. All right.
Be time for some good photos and some good laughs at Miami's expense, which certainly the two people whose voice you're listening to right now are not above doing at all. But I expect an announced of around, say, 43,200 people and an actual attendance to probably be somewhere in the mid to high 20s.
This concludes this episode of the Nolcast. Make sure to rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. Write us at thenolcast@gmail.com. Or tweet us at Nolcast. We apologize for the tardiness of this episode due to some extenuating circumstances. For my prediction of the game, I think the defense is going to step up and assist the Noles offense with James Blackman. By giving them some good field position, I think they'll score more than they won't. So I'll go Noles 23, Wolfpack 14. Today's date is September 22nd, 2017. For Ingram Smith and Bud Elliott, this is your producer, Judson Wright, signing out.